Osiris.
Hey everyone, it's Cam Hurt, host of the Best Show Ever podcast, and we have got a second season coming out very soon that I am very excited about. We've got some very cool special guests, including musical acts that we all love, like Karina Reichman, Daniel Donato, Jake Brownstein from Eggy, Rick and Peter from Goose, and many more. Tune in for new episodes dropping on Osiris Media March 5th on the Best Show Ever podcast.
Hey folks, this is Pokey LaFarge here on my couch.
I made a tugboat fly. Made a python crawl.
Where is your couch these days?
Well, this is technically the breakfast nook. I'll give you a little tour, but it's not really for public consumption right now. I have, today is plant watering day. So I've taken all my plants and they're all kind of sunbathing outside after their little bath.
But literally, where are you in the world?
I'm in Los Angeles. I'm in East Hollywood, I guess you could say. Los Feliz neighborhood.
I could have just come over to your breakfast nook. But, you know, with the Delta variant, who knows?
This coffee's strong. This coffee's really strong. You made a second line, but for now.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to The Show on the Road, my podcast where I bring you on the sonic riverboat of life to introduce you to my favorite songwriters, artists, and band leaders from around the world. And this week, it is my pleasure to bring you a conversation I've been wanting to have for many years. My deep dive with vintage roots and soul excavator and beloved Illinois-born songwriter, Pokey LaFarge, born Andrew Heisler in Bloomington Normal. And I'm really glad Pokey had his guitar with him in his breakfast nook because I think only he can bring us through where his mind and his heart was when he created his new record in the blossom of their shade. Honestly, from the moment I met Pokey LaFarge over a decade ago playing a pirate bar in downtown LA, I could tell that he was like a character out of a movie that you haven't seen yet from 100 years ago. Indeed, he dresses different. He kind of talks different. He exists in his own little world. And that is the greatest thing you can do as a songwriter in my mind. And indeed, besides making timeless records since around 2008 or so, he's actually dove into some movie making as well. You might have spotted him in The Devil All the Time on Netflix, where he played a man who lost his legs from drinking poisonous substances and has to make do the best he can. And while he'll tell you that his mission in life is to spread joy, you could tell in his record, Rock Bottom Rhapsody, that he went through some real tough times. And what's got him through to create this uplifting, joyful, funky new record in the blossom of their shade? Well, maybe falling in love again? Maybe learning how to take some power naps during your songwriting sessions? And maybe most of all, refinding his faith in these darkest of times. And as a songwriter myself, I often struggle with the one-ended conversation that we have with an indifferent God all around us. I'm happy to say that my band Dust Bowl Revival recently recorded a new song called Set Me Free, in which we seem to be shouting to that indifferent spirit, begging him to do something about the tumult and the hatred and the fear that we've created on Earth. But of course, in the end, it really is up to us, after all, to make things a little better. And music, for me, is that conduit into which everybody can be brought together once and for all. Indeed, my band Dust Bowl Revival will be playing our first national tour in, 100 years, starting in Chicago October 30th and ending November 13th at the Hamilton in D.C. But first, a song from the one and only Pokey LaFarge, and then our talk. Okay, here he is, Pokey LaFarge.
The record's entitled In the Blossom of Their Shade, and this song is called Get It For It's Gone. You can interpret that however you like.
Get it before it's gone. Oh, yeah.
get it before it's gone. Get it before it's gone. Oh yeah, get it before it's gone. Get it now. Gone, gone, go get it, gone and get you. Gotta get it before it's gone. Yeah, get it before it's gone. Go.
Very nice.
That track, I think, Get It Before It's Gone, it's the opening track, and then you have the closer, Goodnight, Goodbye, Hope It's Not Forever. I feel like there's a natural bookend to the record of living life to the fullest, but also acknowledging that it could be taken from us at any point. And I know you went through some tough, mental stuff the last couple years, maybe even considering that you shouldn't be in this world anymore. And is this record your, is this record telling people that this is why you're meant to be here?
Yeah, that's good stuff. Yeah. The night is over, it's no time to be alone. Could even be the end of the world as we know. So stay here and love me, I love you just the same. We'll sing that one song we may never sing again. Yeah, that's the good night, goodbye, hope not forever. These songs, I think when I wrote them, I kind of knew exactly where they were going to go on the record, first off. This record is definitely the beginning of what I would say is a new chapter in my life and in my creativity. I'll just give a quick little description or reasoning for saying that, in that before I was singing more for myself, maybe, and for others, keeping others in mind, like my audience, if you
will. Right.
But now I am firmly handing the pen over to more of a spiritual force than rather me taking control and holding firmly onto the pen or whatever else we want to hold on to in life. Basically, just trying to let go. Trying to make every song sort of like a psalm or like a prayer, and not really about self-glorifying or about sex, drugs, and rock and roll anymore. It's definitely more about peace and love at this point.
The last voices we hear, cheers to our memories. Hey, nothing says goodbye like a stiff drink and the tear. Well, nothing says goodbye like a stiff drink and a tear.
Well, coming out of this dark time, I think this record feels like a sonic vacation for our ears.
Right? I love that.
It's like, let's just stop dwelling on the doom scroll news cycle and like maybe go to Costa Rica and have a few cocktails. You know, I think we all kind of need that trip right now, as much as it's good to call out the bullshit of capitalism and politicians or whatever. It's like, sometimes we need to let go and sit on the beach and listen to Mi Ideal. I feel like that song, you know, which you sing a bit in Spanish, it's like dropping us into a tiki bar on a vacation that we all need to take, like, right now. You know?
Yeah, I love the sonic vacation. That's so perfectly encapsulates what has been my last year and a half. Look, it has been sort of a sonic vacation. I've listened to a lot of different music. I've written a lot of music. I've recorded a lot of music. And I've spent this entire time in very sunny and warm and beautiful places.
That song specifically is such a warm little droplet of sunshine that, you know, maybe it's about rediscovering how to fall in love or how to really be present, you know. We really need a little bit of that just pure happiness. Like, we forgot how to maybe give ourselves permission to just listen to happy music, you know. Like, oh, it's frivolous and it's kind of gauche right now when people are struggling and out of work and whatever. It's like, yeah, but we need the lightness to take us out of the dark sometimes, or we're gonna like fall into the pit and never come out.
Well, while everything that you just said, I think, is definitely a component, on the surface, perhaps, if you will, this song was about pursuing that ideal love. And for me, that ideal woman. I was single last year, and it's pretty amazing how full circle this relationship that I'm in now has come. I will just say that, like, your thoughts create things, right? The things that you think,
Yeah. They
will appear. They will happen almost all the time. So it's important to take your thoughts captive. For me, I've also experienced writing songs create things. Things happen after you write a song. So I just wanted to throw that in there for me. But yeah, it was about that ideal love and that ideal woman to come along and give you this like purpose in life or something, or like add this crazy, this color and this ultimate experience. And you seek it out. That's what you want in love. And that's why I think maybe even sometimes people who have been in love, they think they've fallen out of love, or they're not willing to dig deeper and fall in love deeper or whatever. So maybe it can be an inspiration to the single people as well as those that are in relationships.
¿Dónde estás tú? Sha-la-la.
Well, the contrast, I think, to some of the tracks on Rock Bottom Rhapsody, which I love as well, but you could feel the kind of pain in your voice and the sort of reveling in the debauched ending of something, right? Like party at the end of the world type vibes. And, you know, a song like Fuck Me Up, which I love, you know, is in a different headspace completely from some of the tracks on this record.
Yeah, I actually think that they're in contrast to a lot of songs on that specific record. I mean, if you take F Me Up and put it in contrast with, say, Fallen Angel, which has I'll Never Let the Devil Take Me Down, F Me Up being a perfect example, or you write a song and then things went down the drain.
I'm at Wholesome near Western boy that you wanna bring home to your mama, even though I bring you joy. Maybe I'm not the toy you wanna play with at night.
So the song, the album, definitely I could hear the desperation. I was definitely in a desperate state at the time of recording it, and was sort of like just trying to survive. I was definitely in the throes of death at that point, somewhat of a figurative way, but also in a very real, literal way too. Had to put the two albums in color, Rock Bottom Rhapsody was very much black and gray. But then Get It For Its, or excuse me, In the Blossom of the Shade, as you can see, I don't know if you've seen the album cover.
Yeah, very tropical, bright it's colors.
Just, yeah.
Green, full of life.
Yeah, it's been a sort of an awakening, and looking forward to where the music goes from here.
Well, I think that as listeners, we like when our artists, our favorite songwriters, do go through the depths of sorrow and heartbreak without ever thinking that maybe they're also human beings who are having long-term relationships end, having family members pass away, having suicidal thoughts. I mean, there's parts of us that are like, well, whatever it takes to make a great song. But we don't actually think about the toll that it's taking on the songwriter to get that out.
And or do we just want our favorite songwriters to shine light on the very same thoughts and experiences that we're going through? We don't want them to go through it just for their sake. We want them to go through it for our sake.
Yeah.
Because we need somebody to sing the melody to the pain that we're feeling. Or, yeah. It gives worth, right? It's when you know somebody else understands you, it helps. I think that that's what helps, right? Because everybody needs to be heard. Everybody needs to be heard and understood, hopefully. Not just talked at or whatever. So in a way, it kind of shows that the artist understands and is listening when maybe you haven't never said anything.
Well, the song like Lucky Sometimes off of Rock Bottom, I think feels like maybe like a preview of what's to come. Almost this sepia-toned, hopeful look at a fantasy. And it feels like a musical theater piece, something that could be played in a silent movie theater, you know.
Waiting tables at the burger stand. You were sitting alone. I came up for your order and asked you what you want. You said, do you really want to know?
Yeah, that's my Tom Waits, Frank Sinatra, moon-faced ballad, you know, love song. You know, that actually was a song that I wrote sort of earlier on in the record campaign, when everything was still going kind of record campaign while writing the record, while everything was still going great. But again, ultimately to have come full circle, and now I can sing Lucky Sometimes as a true love song to that very same woman I wrote it to back then. So pretty amazing.
Fell in love with me. Yes, you did. You took me to A from Z. Yes, you did. There was something you could see. I was broken, I was poor. Then you said I could be yours, though I don't have a dime. Even bums get lucky sometimes.
Let's go back. You're from Bloomington, right? Illinois.
Bloomington Normal.
Just to antagonize you, because I'm a dick, I wore my White Sox hat today.
Dude, I think that's awesome. I noticed that. Yeah.
Because I appreciate Die Hard.
I could go grab
Hard
one of my 10 Cubs
fans.
Hats and put it on for you if you want to make this a thing. Are you from Chicago?
Yeah.
Are you serious? That's awesome, dude. I was just there last week.
I'm from the North Side, so technically I should be a Cubs fan, but
yeah.
I came from an American League family. My dad was a Yankee fan from New York, and like the Cubs were too sad for him.
But look, the White Sox, I love that team. I've been telling people for a good 3 years, watch out for the White Sox. They're building a dynasty. One. Two, the players they have just have so much character. And also, they're such a diverse team. I think that was it last year they set the record for the most Cubans in a starting lineup in the history of Major League.
Yeah, we just keep drafting the Cuban guys. It's awesome.
So cool. So diverse. Well, but just such a diverse team in general. A lot of people of color. And I think Tony La Russa is great. People keep talking smack. They keep trying to run him out of the league. And he just keeps winning. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's like, what more do you need to know? The guy wins everywhere he goes.
Yeah.
The show on the road is now Chicago sports with Pokey and Zach.
Yeah.
We're just going to switch over the format real quick.
Dude, I'm actually thinking about starting a baseball podcast, so maybe we should talk, you know.
Let's go back. Bloomington Normal.
Yeah.
You start picking up a guitar and playing songs when? How old?
Okay. I bought a guitar by my grandpa when I was maybe 15 or 16, somewhere around there. And I just was tinkering around with it, but it just didn't click with me. I was really falling in love with bluegrass at the time after having listened to a lot of classic rock and blues. I think really it could come down to Bob Dylan and Grateful Dead really being the whole reason why I play folk music to this day, I think. And I fell in love with a mandolin. But I really didn't pick that up and take that seriously until I left home. And I left home right after I graduated high school in 2001. I was kind of hitching around. I really started to cut my teeth in music in Madison, Wisconsin, actually, when I was 19. In terms of blood and in my family, music doesn't really exist anywhere for generations except my dad's brother plays harmonica and guitar and sings. But that wasn't around me. He lived in another state. So I kind of just grew up with it and fell in love with it on my own, listening to records at the library. Mama's in a factory, she ain't got no shoes. Daddy's in the alley, he's looking for food. I'm in the kitchen where the tombstone blues.
I think everybody should busk at some point when they're coming up as a musician.
Oh, for sure. Like, I've even heard stories
just for,
that
like,
Taj
vocal
Mahal.
Power.
Oh, for sure. I've even, although you may learn to sing the wrong way, as I have, and you like project the wrong way and maybe lose your voice more than you should as you get older. Anywho, I just want to say, yeah, Taj Mahal apparently does that. He'll go out and he's in his career made pilgrimages and with no money. He'll go to some town. And if he can't make enough money to get back home, he says he's like, no, I don't know. He challenges himself to do that. I've actually never done that because, like, intentionally. I just did that because I had to when I was younger. But haven't bussed for a while. Maybe I should get back out there and give it a shot.
Venice Beach is calling you.
Yeah.
The Third Street Promenade is waiting for you.
I would not even be able to compete with all the people down there with Robot Man and, like, yeah, no way. I don't think I'd be able to compete. Maybe I should go down there and be a mime. Maybe that's my calling or something, but something more extreme.
But yeah, you have albums that stretch back to 2007, 2008, right? I mean, it goes pretty far back, right? And you had the guys, you know, the South City 3 playing with you for a long time.
Yeah, they would have joined me in 2010 or 11.
And I always remember seeing your, like, was it the La La Blues on the internet, you know? And seeing this guy, the skinny dude in a tweed suit, wherever you were wearing, and it felt like you were from another time, right? You remind me of this guy, C.W. Stone King, who I've long been a huge fan of. obviously, you're not from another time. You're talking with me on Zoom. But do you feel like maybe you reincarnated from a different soul from the 20s and 30s?
Yeah, I don't know. I think I just like what I like and interested in what I'm interested in. I think that specifically acoustic music has always been, well, that's what I fell in love with first, and has always been at the heart of what I do. And still the majority of what I listen to is acoustic music. And I think that that also means soul music, not just, you know, Otis Redding and Percy Sledge, that kind of soul music, but soul music from all around the world. And those things just tend to be a little bit more vintage, if you will, or old-fashioned, because, you know, music has been pretty firmly electric since, I don't know, I guess even the 50s, especially the 60s and onward. It's got more and more, I guess, less and less acoustic, I should say. So with my interest lying in a time when acoustic music was king, and the fact that my style, my fashion sense, sort of is rooted in certain the times when of the music I'm most influenced by, it sort of became kind of a full package, if you will. And, you know, and just also to go further, you know, we see that today, you know, people playing music that's more popular in the 90s, popular in the 60s and 70s. You guys look like they popped out of the 60s, right? Mutton chops and long hair and bell bottoms.
Right.
I'm wet and I'm wild. Honey, I'm short and thin. Thought to squeeze out any position you put me in. I got this old thing called the laughing horse disease. Gonna laugh away to any place that I please. It's la, 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 singing la, la, la. I'm so happy got me singing la, la, la.
Maybe it feels like, he's just, you know, he's pigeonholed in this vintage world. I actually think it's the opposite. I think you embody music that is still living, right? A lot of people think like, oh, a lot of this acoustic blues, you know, sort of this old school country music disappeared after, you know, Hank Williams died or something, you know?
Yeah, I think that what I've always done has sort of been a little bit more on the fringes of, very much on the fringe and on the outside, and more niche than, say, pop culture. Pop culture has adopted country music. Pop culture hasn't really adopted traditional jazz or gypsy jazz or old blues. But I think that it's also just like people are naturally curious, because I think it's a part of their soul. It's soul music. It's like, it's so organic. It's, you can't help but feel it when you hear it. It's just that people don't hear it that much, you know. But when they hear people like Django Reinhardt or Edith Piaf or certain songs from Hoagy Carmichael, I mean, you can't help but do it. At the same time, it's also very difficult music to play. I think that's actually the cool, accessible thing about country and blues. It's so easy to play and easy to understand. So I think that that's actually been the reason why jazz has been sort of pushed out. It's because it's actually become more and more complicated. People in the jazz world have actually taken jazz and made it what arguably was the people's music, right? And made it very much an academic thing. Music has become, jazz has become too academic. And when music becomes too academic, it's not for the people anymore.
Yeah, for me, it all begins and ends with the blues, for me, as the seed of American music, as the bottom of the tree that then branches into rock and roll and soul and funk and jazz. And, you know, and it always amazes me how the most gifted musicians I know can struggle playing like a 12-bar blues. Like, they can't, like, feel the, like, basic vibe of, like a just a straight-ahead blues. Or it feels like, oh, it's like a cliche thing that your grandpa, you know, your dad listens to at the sports bar or something, you know? And it's like, no. And I think a guy like Jack White, who you, you know, connected with about 10 years ago and started, you know, he started championing your work, I think understands the connection between early blues, punk rock, rock and roll and beyond pop music.
I think it would even go deeper than that and say that Jack's a kind of guy that understands that people have been singing the blues since the beginning of time.
Yeah.
How the blues is not necessarily, you know, people get so hung up on genres and instrumentation to define their genre for them. Or I think genres are more or less meaningless. They're things that were created by record business. Because the blues, and again, soul music is... crosses boundaries again. It goes all the way back to the beginning of time, all the way around the world. It's one chord, it's three chords, it's piano, it's guitar, it's a guy banging on a rock and singing to heaven. Is he crying or is he singing? It's the same thing. So I think it's really just more of an essence and more of what you're tapping into, who you're singing to and what you're saying, and how you're saying it, more importantly.
If you could create your own Pokey Lafarge road show with like five artists who are now long in their graves, if you could resurrect them, put them on a train with you,
like a
who
touring,
would those five artists
a
be?
A touring company? Touring band? Touring, yeah. Package tour? I would want to go back. I would want to start a little bit more modern. I would love to have... do you know Esther Phillips?
Sounds familiar.
So there was a few soul artists out there that did country albums, Ray Charles, Percy Sledge, to name a couple. Esther Phillips, the country side of Esther Phillips is one of my favorite records of all time, recorded at RCA Studio B. Absolutely incredible. But she has some straight ahead, hard-hitting soul stuff. But she was always so, like when she was young, she started as Little Esther, her, and Johnny Otis was her backing band, Sugar Otis's dad. Home is where the Hatred Is. That came in second to, I think, Aretha Franklin's R.E.S.P.E.C.T. winning a Grammy.
Home is where the hatred is. Home is filled with pain. And it may not be such a bad idea if I never went home.
But she died early, overdose on heroin. Dude, let's throw Edith Piaf on there. Have her headline. Edith Piaf, Esther Phillips. I would say Andres Landero. He's the king of Colombian cumbia, vallenato music. Maybe Lydia Mendoza, who's a Mexican singer. A brilliant 12-string guitar player from I think 30s through the 50s. And Howlin' Wolf or Bo Diddley, because they're just the funkiest dude that ever lived.
I love those stories about Howlin' Wolf where he was he went back to school or something. Like he was very into furthering his education.
I think he did it to learn business,
right? Exams. He would do his take home exams at the bar and then go on and spray people with champagne and go crazy.
And stick his wicked harmonica up and down. Yeah, he did that to what he wanted to learn business so that he could learn for getting along in the music business better. And he could, you know, the same way Chuck Berry would demand cash before the show, right?
And you do pretty big business in Europe. I mean, I've seen you play in Amsterdam. We were playing upstairs. You were playing the big room over at Paradiso in Amsterdam. What do you think the difference is between the crowds in Europe and the States?
Dude, that's such a good question. I feel like I've been asked that so many times, and I don't know if I think that there's a certain, lack of a better term, air of mystery. But I think that musically, arguably, is perhaps our greatest expression, cultural expression. And I think that it's something that's really championed around the world. And so we kind of have a red carpet rolled out for us when we go to the, you know, and that being said, especially in the Netherlands and in the UK and in Ireland, where as an American roots musician, that's where you kind of make your breakthrough. And then you're really lucky if you're able to break through the rest of Europe. I also think that in Europe, in the UK, generally things are just, people are surrounded by older things, right? Mm. All the buildings are old. They're used to, they live a slower, more refined life, even though their politics may be more progressive, arguably, or you could argue perhaps that's because they're older and they've learned. I don't know, however you want to argue that.
Yeah.
But I think them being in the midst of older things all the time has to be a component there too, being that, you know, we play vintage music, if you will. I just know that, yeah, I had to go there to make a name for myself before I can make a name for myself here, that's for sure.
Your song Rotterdam actually just came out.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. What, yesterday? 2 days ago?
It's a tough town. I mean, I've been there a few times. You know, it's not like the most romantic of the Dutch areas. And I think romanticizing it feels kind of awesome in its own way, you know, because the people are so down at that one, what's the place, Rotown? They're so down for American music. And I think it's like you're paying homage to them in some way.
Yeah, well, you know, I spent a lot of time in the Netherlands, Zach, and the thing also was that song is more like Rotterdam is utopia. It's not specifically that I wanted to, or even now want to live in Rotterdam to get away from certain trials and tribulations in the States. It's again, Rotterdam is utopia. But there is a high level of acceptance and sort of harmony in the Netherlands, at least on the surface. And I really appreciated that, how, you know, ever since I've gone there as a lyric, because ever since I've gone there, I've always felt at peace. You know, that's for sure. Also, I've spent a lot of time specifically in Rotterdam with my friends at the Schorum Barbershop, which have become international celebrities since I started going there. Not because of me, obviously. But just, I have a lot of friends there. I'm a huge World War II buff. And just knowing what they went through specifically during World War II and how the whole city was bombed out. They're the working class city. Kind of feels very Midwestern in that sense of how they're their second city. Rotterdam is the second city to Amsterdam. And the way that Chicago is second city to New York. You know, maybe that's a little antiquated at this time. But.
Back to
excited to go back there and play that song for those people. I was supposed to be playing that in September, but the nightclub shut down again, so we're gonna have to move it till next year. And if I'm able to do it next spring, it'll literally be 2 years removed from when it was originally scheduled.
Do you need like a creative writing springboard? Like, is there something where you're like, okay, there's a little postcard from Rotterdam that you catch out of the side of your eye and you're like, wait a second, that has to be a song? Or is it just instant inspiration? Sometimes I need to like look around my space. I hear something on the radio. I need something else to help me start a song. A lot of times I can't just like come out of thin air with this, you know, fully formed story.
Yeah, all that, what you just said, I think as artists, you take whatever you can get to get you going, right? Some people use sex, some people use drugs, some people use the past, some people use the present, some people use the future, other people use their dreams. Whatever you can to awaken the muse. I like to work almost first thing in the morning through the afternoon. I'm very much a morning and daytime person. I don't work at night. I stop working at dinner time. I love cooking dinner, and that's my sign that I'm done. 5, 6 o'clock, I'm done. And wind down at night. A tidbit within the daytime thing, the daytime work schedule that I use, I do find that power naps really help to awaken things, or to stop and just rest and power nap, and then it lets things kind of settle. The dust sort of settles, and then you can really see what you're trying to say at that point, you know?
Do you meditate?
I will definitely meditate on God. I will definitely meditate on the Word. I will definitely pray, for sure. The thing that has really opened up my songwriting in the last few months is I wake up every morning and sing a psalm. I mean, really, when you think about it, are songs and prayers really that different? For me, I don't really want them to be, whether they're jubilant or sorrowful. Speaking of gratitude or of anguish or pleading, I think that that's kind of how I want it to read. So,
well, Long for the Heaven I Seek feels like it could
is,
be.
Is a good example of that. Yeah, for sure. That's the first sort of song that I wrote in that, with that pursuit, if you will, that posture.
I've been sent out like a sheep among wolves, snakes on the trail, broken wings of a dove. I tried to push back the sunset, and God burnt. Light shines from the moon till darkness returns. I strain to hear heaven's bells ring, but I'm tired of waiting for the angels to sing. Oh Lord, take me home.
Ever listen to that Johnny Cash record, Hymns? It's like one of my all-time favorite vinyls that I found at like a thrift store or something, but like it's him singing his favorite sort of church songs or things he grew up with, and it's just oof.
Yeah, it's so good. Yeah, me and I think you know Addie Hamilton, right? Do you know her? She's LA,
so, yeah.
And Pete Molinari. We did a couple shows together where we sang some of those songs. Some of those Johnny Cash ones where June Carter and the Carter family are, you know. I'd like to do more of that. I love those old gospel tunes, for sure.
I have a mixed relationship with religious music because, on one hand, Mahalia Jackson specifically, but, you know, Sister Rosetta Tharpe, a lot of that early gospel music, it, like, hits me in some sort of bizarre past life regression thing where I'm like, I don't know what this is. I don't have any affiliation with, you know, most of the church that these people went to. But I feel like this music is as close to what God is as possible. And that new documentary that Questlove did, Summer of Soul, I don't know if you've seen it yet. But
I didn't see it, no.
Oh, there's like Mahalia Jackson singing with a young Mavis Staples who's like maybe 18, 19. I look back in the crowd. We saw it in Hollywood. Everyone was just like crying, like in the theater. And it's mostly like, you know, white people, old guys in beards with their wives. And it was just like you couldn't like contain like the emotion watching this. And, you know, when you get up on stage, do you feel like singing is sort of a spiritual experience, that you're like a preacher in some way?
In the way that a preacher is a conduit, I definitely believe in the power of song. I definitely know that God loves music, as angels are singing in heaven around him daily all the time, worshiping. Music is a part of who we are. I don't think that music is the only way that I could carry out my gift of life, get the gift that I was given. I think that I was put on earth to spread joy. I think I can do that with music. I can do that with a conversation. I can do that in a lot of different ways, but music is definitely something that I enjoy, and I'm grateful for that opportunity to sing. Being more aware of all of those things now, I'm very conscious of who I'm singing to, and the power that can have, not only in the spiritual world, but also in this present world. Again, as you said, when you hear music, you can't quite explain it, but it touches something inside of you because you have a soul. And it's doing things, more things than you can really interpret it, probably in a conscious state. I mean, just in the same way that we're taking in more that we can process at any given time. But it's all there. So that's what's so cool about music, because it can awaken these things that you haven't been able to explain yourself yet. As much as you pray, as much as you write, and as much as you talk, right? When you get in this state, you'll write things you're like, what am I even saying right now? So that's exciting. Mm.
Yeah, I feel like songwriters, and maybe you agree or not, I think we often have trouble maybe feeling things as deep in our personal life as we do in our writing or in our performing. Like sometimes, you know, you could say, oh, I love you to your partner. But like, if you write a song with the love in it, it's like the fully realized personification of your love, you know? Like, I feel like I have trouble just sort of opening up about, you know, emotions or about basic kind of like fears, you know? But man, I can write about the apocalypse or about people losing their lives and their sanity in a song, and I feel totally natural doing it.
That's okay, though. You know what I mean? As long as you're aware of what you're saying, and maybe, I think that you can learn from what you're writing. You can learn from keeping a journal, writing a song, keep tabs on what you're saying to your shrink. I mean, everybody has a different love language. Everybody has a different way of showing their love. Everybody has a different way of receiving love. I think that's okay. You know, actually, at the same token, I think that that's really cool that you show love and you show what you're going through in a song, because then you're creating something. Creating something. Words get lost all the time. You can say, you can pour your heart out to your partner, to your friend, to your family all the time, but the words go in one ear and they go out the other. You know what I mean? Words are powerful, no doubt, but a song is a creation that could last perhaps the test of time.
What is the most romantic thing you think you've ever done?
Dude, that's such a good question.
He's leaning forward in the breakfast nook. The wheels are turning.
Yeah. Pitcher leans in for the signs. I love how you're narrating my life there. I don't know. I'd want to ask Addie. I feel like the one thing that I did that was pretty good. I'm not very good at keeping surprises, but there was one time I did. I told Addie that we were in San Francisco and I was going to take her to a place that was going to be the most amazing place she'd ever seen. It started raining and she said, okay. I was like, and she asked how far we were going to walk. I said, about a half mile or a mile. She said, can I wear my roller skates? And I was like, well, it's going to be raining and we do have a mile to go, but if you insist on wearing your roller skates, that might actually be perfect.
Lots of hills also.
We're right on Fisherman's Wharf. And we show up to the front of, have you ever heard of Musée de Mécanique?
No.
It's like the greatest collection of 100-year-old mechanical, you know, arcade games and like the pictures we roll through and make the early movies. Like, it's a huge warehouse right on Fisherman's Wharf. We walk in and it's just, her mind is completely blown. The guy who runs the place
is also on roller skates. That's how he gets around. You press a button if a machine goes down. He zooms in on his roller skates and his Daisy Dukes and his colorful suspenders like Robin Williams and Mork and Mindy, and he fixes the machine on the spot. We get back to the, we're seeing the seals on the wharf, and we just having so much fun. I'm spinning around on the roller skates. We get back to the car and the window's bashed in and my computer's taken. All the writing I've done for the last few years. We end up driving north to John Muir and spend a really romantic weekend up there. But I think that's the first thing that came to mind.
It took a dark turn at the very end.
Yeah, you know, it's just, that's life, man.
Can't tell the meaning in your eyes. Oh, but I mean to. I can't tell truth from lies. Tell me, can you? Even God has secrets, only Mother Nature knows. Time will always tell. I wonder if you ever will.
Well, all right. There goes that man, Pokey LaFarge. You can go to PokeyLaFarge.net for his newest record, In the Blossom of Their Shade, on New West Records. It is an uplifting masterpiece, in my opinion. He'll be hitting the road again November 3rd at Fine Line in Minneapolis, November 4th, Talia Hall in Chicago, and then playing in Grand Rapids, Indianapolis, Charleston, West Virginia, Pittsburgh, and more. So please check that out. He is a wonderful live performer. As you might have heard at the top of this program, My Gang Dust Bowl Revival will be playing our first national tour since the world shut down in 2020. We'll be playing in Chicago, New York City, Boston, D.C., and more. Please check it out, dustbowlrevival.com. I want to send a big high five to everyone who has been listening to this program for the 3 years that I've been putting it out onto the airwaves. Thanks to the Bluegrass Situation for distributing it, and everyone who has left a kind review on the Apple Podcasts page. If you haven't yet, please do so. It really means a lot. As always, this show is written, produced, and edited by yours truly, Zach Lubitin, and we are part of the BGS Podcast Network. Stay safe, get vaccinated, and we'll see you on the trail.
Ever wonder what a punch from Elton John feels like?
Or how you'd cope with having turned down the chance to be in Nirvana?
Or what signal Keith Richards gives when he wants you to get the hell out of his hotel room?
Fans of Too Much Effing Perspective don't have to wonder, because they've heard these exact stories and a jillion others on our podcast. I'm Alex Hoffman, former tour manager for Radiohead.
And I'm musician and comedy writer Alan Keller. On the TMEP show, we get guests like Nancy Wilson from Heart, Jeremiah Freights from the Lumineers, and Modern Family's Julie Bowen to tell us things they may have only shared with their therapist, clergy, or a TMZ stringer.
So join us on Too Much Effing Perspective. That's EFFING Perspective. The only podcast you crank up to 11.